Our final story is from author Isabel Carmody.
I was a little bit late, and I suspect it's because part of me doesn't want to tell this story. It's the first time I've told it. I had a letter from a woman who wrote to a website, and my PA wrote to me and she said, "I think you should read this, Isabel." And she sent it to me, and it was this letter from this mother saying, "My daughter has cancer, and she has, we've gone through all the possibilities of treatment, and there's nothing that we can do with her. She's 16 years old." My daughter was 16 at that time. "She's 16 years old, and there's nothing anybody can do." And she said, "But I came into her the other day, and I found her crying. And I said to her, 'What's the matter?'" And she said to me all of the things that she's going to miss out in life. One of the things that she's going to miss out on was the last book in the Overnewton Chronicles, which, you know, it's hilarious. I have a website called Hurry Up Isabel Carmody. People write to it and complain about how there's a whole website devoted to bitching about how slowly I finish my books. But none of those things anybody ever said affected me the way reading that letter did. And the mother wrote, "I don't know if there's anything you can do. I know that you may not even have a book yet, but I wonder if there's anything you can do to give my daughter closure. Could you write to her something about the end?" So I really thought about this, and I had at that point 700 badly written pages. Now, 2 weeks ago, I finished the 1,200-page manuscript. So it wasn't all there yet, and it was a long time before I'd finished it, a good year ago. And I didn't have it, anything near a complete book. And I really thought about, what can I do? I don't want to give you the manuscript. It's practically unreadable anyway. I was in another country at the time. I was in Prague, in fact. And I lived for 10 years in Prague, so I was in Prague. And what can I do? And so I thought about it for a really long time. And then I wrote to the mother and I said, "Look, this is what I'll do. I have a manuscript. It's 700 pages long. Do you have Skype?" And she wrote and she said, "No, but I can get it." So she set up Skype, and for the next maybe 7 months, I read nightly to this girl. And I'm reading a story that's, for me, the end of a 28-year journey. Like, I wrote that book, first book in the Overnewton Chronicles, when I was 14. And so I'm finishing it. And for me, it's a huge journey, and it means a lot to me. So I've got this last manuscript, and I'm reading it to her night by night. And it's funny because I read in the night. We worked out that she doesn't sleep because she's in a lot of pain, and I can only call her in the middle of the night, which suited us both. So I didn't want anyone else to read the manuscript or to hear it. And we talked about it, she and I, Tash and I, and she said, "I will not let anyone listen. It's the middle of the night anyway." So her parents would go to bed at night and I would ring her on Skype. And what we'd arranged was that when she didn't feel good, because sometimes in the middle of a reading she just didn't feel right anymore, she would just shut it and I would see that she'd got cut off and that was okay. And I said to the mother right from the start, this cannot be about an author ringing my daughter. This has to be about her, and it has to be very calm and quiet. And like I read to my daughter at night, I will read to her. So over 6 months, I read to her basically every night. Sometimes she went to hospital to have her pain medication altered. And in that year it wasn't quite a year. In that period of time that I read to her, I was sometimes on tour in Australia. Sometimes my daughter was with me and she would say, "Can I listen too?" So she would lay on her bed and I would be Skyping from wherever I was in the world to Tash night after night. Sometimes I'd read sad bits of the story and I would want to cry because for me it was sad. I was killing off a character I loved. Something tragic was happening. If you've ever seen Romancing the Stone, where the woman cries her heart out because she's writing this soppy romance story, I think all writers do that some of the time. We all cry at what we write, which sounds really sentimental. But I was trying really hard not to when I was reading it aloud to her, because I kept thinking of the absurdity of crying over a fictional character when somebody, you know, a 16-year-old girl was slowly dying as I was reading to her. But it wasn't about that, the reading mostly. Sometimes she'd stop me and because it was bad, I'd say, "Look, this is really badly written. I'll just tell you this bit." And I'd tell her. And she's woven all through that book. And towards the end of getting to the end of the 700-page manuscript, where I had an end, but a very rough end, and something happened in the book that was really sad, and I was really trying to hold it together, and I'd managed every other night, and I couldn't hold it together on this particular night. So I was trying really hard to cry quietly while I was reading, and the next minute I could hear tissues being pulled out of a box on the other end. And I just burst out laughing and crying at the same time, and she started to laugh and cry too. And we couldn't go on that night. We just ended up talking for hours and hours that night. And I said, look, this is completely mad that we're crying over this. And I said, and you're facing something much worse. And she said, but it's so nice to escape into a book. And I really felt in that moment that maybe this was one of the nicest things I'd ever done in my life. Anyway, not long after that, of course, you know, she was getting sicker. And I spent in those times, it's going to sound very, very beautiful, but I spent in those days, I used to go to the Greek islands and write for a month every year. And so I went to the Greek islands, and it was very hard to get reception. And I said to her mum, I'm going to be somewhere where I can't get very good reception. I'll try and find places to contact her. And her mum said, no, she's going into hospital to have her medication adjusted again. We'll do it when you come back. And of course, I was in Greece when her mum called and said she died. So, and I hadn't finished the book. And the worst thing is, the last thing I read to her was something really sad that had happened. But I knew that further on in the book, it wasn't what it was thought to be. And I really couldn't wait to get her there, but she never did get there. So in the end, when I finally finished the book, that she's all the way through the book in many ways. In fact, I put her in the book as a character in the end, because she was just so much there for me while I was writing it. And towards the end of writing it, maybe 3 weeks ago, I came across the very last time that her name appeared in the book. And the reason I put her name in was so that each time I came back to read, I put her name in and I would put find Natasha, and it would find her. And so I passed the last time I'd ever read to her. And that might have been the moment I could have lost the plot, because it's a most incredible privilege to have been in her life in that moment. But I'll tell you when I did lose the plot, and I'm not ending this on a sad note, I'm ending it on a note of rage. There was a moment when I had a meeting with my publishers a week ago when we were all celebrating the end of the book. And somebody, one of the editors who knew this had gone on, and I said to her, I was just saying to her privately about it being really painful to pass that last moment when Natasha was there. And one of the other people said, what do you mean? So I told the story as best that I could in a very condensed version. And one of the publicity people said, Isabel, if this ever happens to you again, just call me and we'll get rid of them for you. And that's when I lost the plot, because I thought, what is the matter with you people? All you care about is money. All you care about is publicity. What about the people who read these books? She was one of them. She's one of your stupid customers. You know, one of the people you don't care about. You only care about the bottom line. She didn't hear one thing I said. And it was a moment in which I felt that many of the things I feel about the publishing industry in general, I felt it most passionately in the moment, that we, you and me, we have to guard books and we have to guard life and we have to guard it from those people who don't get it, who don't get it. And when they don't get it, we have to lose the plot. Thank you.
Isabel Carmody there with a haunting call to arms for us to retain our humanity. Isabel's final Ober Newton book was released just a couple of weeks ago and is on shelves now, so you can read that book yourself. Now, that's all we have time for today. Thanks to the Right Around the Murray Festival and the Albury Library Museum teams for having us. Sound engineers for the night were Richard Gervin and Con Karamountsis. And technical producing today by Martin Peralta. I'm Melanie Tate. I hope you have a great week and get a story or two out of it.